You're listening to the Sarah Fader podcast. This is What Anxiety Feels Like. And I'm with my friend today, Dr. Amy Marshall. Say hello to everybody.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So Amy is a clinical psychologist, and she works at a practice in Sioux Falls with adolescents and adults. Is that correct?
Children, adolescents, and then I do some work with adults. I kind of fell into the adult side of things. I kind of fell into working with children. And then that kind of became my niche. But then more and more, as far as the assessment side of things, I've been working with adults. Specifically, there just really isn't anybody who does ADHD and autism testing if you're over 18. And so people would call and, you know, instead of saying, well, sorry, your parents didn't get you tested when you were six, I guess we'll never know. I kind of just started doing it. So,
well, that leads me into my next kind of introduction. And we talk a lot about ADHD on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that's really what drew me to you is you talk about it in a candid way. And you actually live with ADHD. Right?
Yes, and I didn't know that until December, which is kind of hilarious because I've been doing evaluations for it and I've been doing treatment for it since 2016. Also, autism, I got diagnosed last month. And again, I've been working with and diagnosing and helping people live with stress and anxiety that can come with that diagnosis for several years. And nobody thought to say, hey, you know, maybe there's a reason you have so much in common with your clients.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Also, I feel like women often get overlooked and misdiagnosed or not diagnosed with ADHD. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. So we used to believe basically that if you had ADHD, your presentation is going to be consistent in multiple environments, because if you have anxiety, you might be anxious at school, but calm at home. But if you have ADHD, it's a brain difference. So you have ADHD no matter where you are. And we assumed that that translated to your behavior would be the same no matter where you are. And girls and women, but pretty much anybody who's not a cisgendered male, pretty much learns to mask to an extent from an early age. I mean, people who are trans are masking because they're not aligning with the gender that everyone told them that they are. And girls specifically, you'll see, you know, if you see a boy getting out of his seat, moving around, making a disruption, it's often, oh, he's a boy, they do that. And if a girl does that, it's sit down, that's not ladylike. So girls would learn to compensate and mask. And we would then say, oh, well, she behaves at school, she just has trouble at home, therefore it's not ADHD, or symptoms could manifest more as inattention. And it's harder to observe inattention in another person than hyperactivity, or that hyperactivity would manifest as what we call cognitive hyperactivity. So one thought after another, thoughts feeling like they're going really, really fast, maybe difficulty falling asleep at night because your brain won't slow down enough for you to fall asleep. And that's very hard to observe in another person. So the symptoms are not overtly external. So we would say, oh, you know, pretty much the way that we screen for ADHD is, are you inconveniencing the adults in charge of you? And if the answer is no, then we say, oh, you don't have ADHD.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can speak to that. I didn't get diagnosed with ADHD until I was 24.
Sure.
And I think one of the reasons is the masking, and also in my early life, it presented as daydreaming and inattention. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's easy to kind of cover up. And I also learned to do the things that I was good at and avoid the things that were difficult,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what is it about that, the avoidance piece? Mm-hmm. How does avoidance and ADHD, how do those
sure.
two things go together?
Sure. So it's more ADHD brain craves novelty. ADHD brain likes the thing that's new, that's different, that's exciting. And so the thing that is difficult, if it's not challenging in an engaging way, then it just sucks. And a lot of times when you get ADHD plus being kind of in that sort of gifted range cognitively, gifted kids in general often are not challenged at school. So they don't learn how to overcome that something is hard. They just learn how to do things. And so then you can run into, if it's hard, then it's impossible because I've never learned how to figure out how to do a hard thing. And it's not interesting or exciting or novel. So I just, you know, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and also it's the inattention versus the hyperactivity. I know lately, I'm not sure when this shift was made, but I've heard that people are not referring to ADD anymore. Yes. It's ADHD inattentive type or ADHD hyperactive type or ADHD combined.
Right. That is, I think it was the DSM-4 that got rid of ADD, and now they're just both ADHD. My understanding, and granted, when I was in my program, we were using the 4 text revision, which already was ADHD. And then the 5 came out. The 5 came out a week after my coursework finished, by the way. That was awesome. Congratulations on finishing your coursework. The book we just taught you is now obsolete. You have to go buy a new one and learn it.
Amazing. But,
right? Yeah. So my understanding is what they were finding is that inattentive, hyperactive, or combined type treatment recommendations are very similar on the MD side of things, like medication is the same for all three types. And the majority of people are combined types. So they were basically finding, you know, to simplify things, they gave it a much longer name, but that's a lot of people who now have one diagnosis instead of two separate diagnoses.
Yeah. Well, my child is interrupting me. So one second. Ari, I am doing a podcast. Can you ask Neil for whatever you need? Okay, Neil can do that for you.
Aw.
Yes. Even though I've already told him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know? So what is your feeling about letting go of the term ADD?
So people seem confused by it. And I've had to explain this in many evaluations that I'm doing because they'll say, I'm here to get tested for ADD. And I'll say, oh, okay, ADHD. No, ADD. So people get a little bit confused by it. I think it does streamline a little bit because there is so much overlap. And I do kind of wonder, and I've heard speculation about this, but the inattentive versus hyperactive impulsive, like, does that really break it down in the best way? What, you know, why are we lumping hyperactive and impulsive and not like impulsive and inattentive? You know, that it's kind of three things, but we lumped it into two, and both subtypes have a lot of executive dysfunction. We don't specify that as a as an inattentive type issue. There's also, you can see, especially in kids, emotion regulation can be a lot harder with ADHD because feelings feel much bigger and bigger much more quickly. And that can lead to, you know, meltdowns, outbursts, stuff like that. And then it's like, well, are those outbursts, is that an impulsive response? Is that a hyperactive response? Is emotion regulation under inattentive? So I do kind of wonder if the way we break it down is maybe still not the best. I don't know how many categories we would need though. I don't quite have the answer to that.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because I think some of the people that have the inattentive kind, like I have a friend, when I say, oh, ADHD, and she's like, I would rather just keep calling it ADD because she doesn't have hyperactive.
Sure.
You know? And I'm like, the DSM is going to tell you you're wrong, but it doesn't really matter what you call it.
Yeah. You know? And I kind of feel like if an individual resonates with a term, even if it's not the clinical term, I'm not going to, I might say, here's why we stopped using that term. But, you know, we get that, you know, in the autism community, Asperger's was a diagnosis until 2013. And I think we had very good reasons for not differentiating that anymore. But if you go your whole life thinking I'm different, I don't quite fit in, I struggle with these things no one else seems to struggle with, and after years and years of that, someone sits down with you and says, hey, here's what's different about you. Here's the name for it. And then 10 years later, they say, by the way, we don't like that name anymore. It's this name now. Some people might say, well, this is the name that resonates with me and I'm going to keep using it for myself. So I don't fault anyone that, but I just will let them know, you know, the psychology Bible doesn't have that term anymore.
Right. Well, the Asperger's shift is ironic to me because, you know, one of the traits of autism is having difficulty with transitions and change. So imagine somebody with Asperger's then being told, hey, guess what? We're not using that anymore. I can imagine one individual with Asperger's saying, well, I'm not letting that go.
Sure. If it resonates and if it works for you, that's great. And it's not the only diagnosis we have that's named after someone who was not a great person when they were alive. So,
I didn't realize that that's they stopped using it.
That was part of it. So, well, they stopped using it because psychologists couldn't agree. Like a lot of people ended up diagnosed with Asperger's and autism. And psychologists had a hard time agreeing on what makes this person Asperger's and this person autistic and like separating the two. And there was a lot of overlap. And with things like autistic burnout that can impact support need levels and things like that, they were saying someone could meet for Asperger's, but then they hit burnout and then they're more in the autistic range of things. So again, it was to kind of simplify, pull it all together. But the other reason, Hans Asperger was a Nazi. So,
oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, his research was, let's take all of these kids, it was the autistic. First of all, he didn't believe women could be autistic. Only boys can be autistic, according to him. But he said, we need to identify which kids are autistic and we need to divide up the autistic kids into the autistic kids who could be good workers, who we can like put in our science labs and have them, you know, the ones who can like special interest in a way that's going to generate revenue for us or get stuff done that we want. And the ones that aren't going to be good workers, we're going to exterminate. So his research was let's find the good autistics so we can put them to work. And then the bad autistics we're going to kill. So
Well, now I definitely don't want to use that term.
But you know, if you were diagnosed at a young enough, you know, at an early enough point, and you're like, this is the word that explained everything to me, you know, if people resonate, I don't want to tell them, you know, stop it, like, stop using this thing that was the answer for everything for you. But you know, we should just be aware. But you know, the Nazis also developed the technology that led to smartphones, and
I'm
still using my iPhone. Like I'm going to be aware of that and I'm going to be critical of them, but I still have my smartphone. So
I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yep. They didn't really plug that was part of it. I don't think APA is working on acknowledging that they've got some not so great stuff in their past. But they're still working on admitting, hey, some of the stuff that we were in favor of was really messed up. I mean, it took them 6 years to be like, you're right, psychologists shouldn't torture people. They were like, no, we're neutral on torture. What?
Yeah. Actually, that's probably not the greatest
the neutral on torture? Excuse me.
Well, it's to me, things like what is it? ECT, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are kind of controversial still. Because you know, you think about it can be effective for people, but then there's a side effect. People are losing memory.
Sure. Well, and it was used pretty terribly. I don't do anything with ECT, and I don't know. Like, I'm not an expert on it by any stretch. But my understanding is, for a while, it was kind of, you're behaving in a way we don't like. We're gonna shock your brain until you listen to it. So it was basically like a half a step away from a lobotomy.
Yeah, exactly. In the 50s, you know. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, in terms of, you bring up a good point, though, about like what terms we use, what terms we don't use.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a lot of this happen with cancel culture, too. Some people even believe that cancel culture doesn't exist.
Well, sure, because most people, it's accountability. And most people come back, you know, we talk about like, what does it mean to be canceled? Do you know, can you think of someone who did something and completely lost everything and never got to come back from it? Like, people come back from most things.
Yeah.
And if they don't, it's kind of, isn't there a threshold where maybe someone should, maybe Hans Asperger should be canceled,
So what is your opinion on cancel culture? Does it exist?
I don't really think so, because, you think about, I guess first thing that pops into my head is like, oh, I don't want anybody like messaging me, but like with the comedians, like with Louis C.K., he took like 9 months off, but he's back now. So like, was he really canceled? Because he came back. He still has a career.
Right. Exactly.
Doing the same thing. Not hopefully not like the thing that got him canceled, but doing the same job that he was doing when he got quote unquote canceled. Like he came back.
Yeah. See, my issue with cancel culture is the fact that you can't cancel a person like you cancel a TV station.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
I think we should be focusing more on trying to educate people rather than singling someone out for bad behavior and then pretending they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't we try to educate them and also like use it as a teachable moment?
Mm-hmm. But people do come back from it. And I do notice that a lot of times it'll be this specific thing is the thing that's getting people's attention. But typically the reason those things catch on, if you really follow them, is that someone says something not okay and people look them up because it's the internet. You can find stuff I published in my high school lit magazine when I was 16, if you dig far enough.
Yeah.
And they'll find that, okay, that was a crappy thing to say. But then when you look this person up, you establish that it's not that they weren't paying attention today. It's a pattern of behavior. And they've been doing these kinds of things for a long time and they haven't been held accountable. So it looks like they made this one mistake and now everybody's really mad, but it's really, they've been making this mistake ongoing and haven't been held accountable. And for whatever reason, this particular comment was the spark that made people realize there's the whole pattern of behavior.
Yeah. See, cancel culture. I feel like now I miss the concept of call out culture. Why can't we call it accountability culture?
I think it gets called cancel culture as a way to dodge that accountability. Because if I say something and it turns out, if I make a mistake, which I do frequently, I will amend. But if someone is like, hey, this thing you said really sucked and this should be a learning moment for you, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm being canceled, everyone's blowing this out of proportion. And then it kind of becomes, then you're like dodging the accountability because it's like, oh, you're canceling me, instead of, I'm sorry, you're right, I should not have said that or done that, or here are the steps I'm taking to try to learn better. And I mean, I feel like we should be taking those steps before we are called out. We're all learning. We're all unlearning. we're all doing, especially, I mean, I'm a white lady. I have certain things ingrained in me that I'm probably never going to get to. Well, not probably, I'm never going to get to the point where I'm done. I'm perfect now. Everything's good. I've unlearned all my biases. I'm never going to make a mistake again.
Never again.
Right. Yeah. So, I try to be learning it before I say something, and then I can say the wrong thing less often because I'm being cognizant of it, but I'm still going to miss things just because of,
I think, well, that's the thing is we all are trying our best, right?
Mm-hmm. Mostly.
Well, actually, let me avoid black and white thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Let's CBT this.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying my best. I think you're trying your best.
Yeah.
Maybe in his own way, Hans Asperger was trying his best, but I don't think that was a good thing.
Actually, that brings up a good point.
Sure.
So I think that regardless of who you are, you're trying your best with the tools that you have. Even a serial killer is trying the best with the tools that person has. It's not great. it's not
trying
good.
Their best, just not at a thing that we should maybe be trying.
Right. Right, exactly.
Ted Bundy was really good at the thing that he decided to put his energy on.
He did not have, he was not very good at being a good person, but
sure.
That was all he had.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not, you know, he did horrible things. But I mean, mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is some people, their best is not very good.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. that's my point. But, you know,
sure.
All you can do is try your best.
Sure. Well, and in order to educate, people have to be open. And because you can't force someone. And depending on what was said, I don't think it should be on the oppressed, like the target group of whatever the action or the comment, whatever it was. Like, it shouldn't be on them to educate the person who just said something or did something harmful to that group. But also the person who said it needs to be open to education. And if they're not, then you're not really, it's not really a good use of your time. You kind of bang your
I agree. So I agree with you on the fact that it's not that group's responsibility to educate the person who said something ignorant. Mm-hmm. However, here's the danger that we run into, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you say to that person, let's say that person's open to learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the person reaches out to the target group and says, I want to know more about XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And then the target group says, it's not my job to educate you. But then what if that person then goes and gets unreliable resources,
mm-hmm.
right? Or unreliable sources that are sure. not going to educate them, that are going to further that ignorance. Where do we draw the sure. line, right?
That's why you need the allyship, but yeah. the people being willing to step up. And it's hard because when someone is correcting you, there's not really a way to correct someone with a positive tone. So you run it, you also get like that, well, I was willing to learn, but then you were rude to me, and you get like the tone policing. Because if you think about it, if the message is I am correcting you, it doesn't matter how you're presenting that message. I could hear it as you're being rude to me. And so you can, so you've got to be willing to go in and say, okay, whatever your tone is, I'm going to hear your message.
Yeah, but
the problem is you have to get people, like people have to recognize, hey, when you're being corrected, it's not going to feel good. Nobody wants to be corrected. So you've got to let go of the, well, I would have learned if you had just been nicer about it, or if you just said it in a kinder way, or like, yeah, because no matter, I could be, hey, you know, just so you know, no offense, but maybe think about, but as soon as the correction's in there, it's, oh, you're being mean, you're being rude.
Oh yeah, I don't think that it's useful to even, because it's logical versus emotional. But my issue with it is that I want for myself and for anybody who's trying to learn to be
sure.
able to have reliable sources.
Sure.
So that's the hard thing, is if you say to if someone from X group is saying like, well, this is wrong, but it's not my job to tell you what's right.
Mm-hmm.
But then it puts that other person in a position where they're like, well, how do I learn? You
sure.
know, like, where do I go? How mm-hmm. do I find these resources? I'm worried. Like, that's how I would feel if somebody were correcting me and I'd be like, well, I want to learn, but I'm not sure if I'm going to the right resources.
Sure, sure. Yeah, we need like that. Well, we need to teach people how to vet resources and vet sources. Like that's an issue.
Yeah,
that's an issue already. We know from COVID that people don't know how to vet a source at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, because if you think about it, if somebody is saying something, some ignorant stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's also likely that they're not good at vetting sources.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean.
Sure.
And so I feel like maybe that's an area that, like you said, it's an area we need to figure out how to teach people. Right.
Sure. But they have to want to receive the teach. Cause I think a lot of the times where it's, well, it's not my job to educate you, is because you get the sea lioning where mm-hmm. someone is not actually wanting to learn, but they're wanting to drain your energy.
Oh yeah, exactly. So and that's a different story.
Yeah. So how do I know that you actually want to learn? How do I know that you actually want to receive these sources versus you're trying to just drain my energy so that, you know, I'm sending you things that you're not actually looking at? Like, how do you know which type of person? Because
You don't know.
They will act like that. They'll start off acting like, oh, I just want to learn. And, you know, I mean, I try not to feed the trolls, but I've fallen into it too, that I'm like, no, I'm just explaining it to you. Like they seem to want me to explain it to them. And it's no, they just want your focus and your energy so that it's not going to something more productive, basically.
I feel like maybe as a society, mm-hmm. right, we could say, what would be so, I mean, and it's not like, not everyone has to do this, but if you think about it, it's like, what do you identify with? Okay, well, I'm a Jew, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I could, as a part of being Jewish, put on my profile, like, hey, want to learn more about Judaism? Here's some resources for you, you know? I mean, or like, it could be a good way for people to learn about things that you're mm-hmm. either you identify with or you're passionate about, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's so nice to be able to teach people things without having to actually actively teach them.
to put it out there and be like, hey, here's the resource. Ask me for it. It's right there.
Right. Check Twitter bio.
Yeah, exactly. Check my bio. It's right there. So
in true tradition of the ADHD nonlinear thinker, I'm going to jump back to something we talked about.
Sure. You're like, let's discuss ADHD. And I'm like, Nazis.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's how my brain works. I'm like, let's talk ADHD. Nazis are bad.
I know. Also, Armani is your cat. That's you know.
Somewhere. I don't know where he is, right? He might join us.
He's so cute.
Yeah.
He's probably, I don't know if you know this, but you know, the emo cats told me that Armani joined a screamo band.
He did. Aww.
He did. I gotta send you that link. You know, he didn't want to tell you.
Yeah. I don't think I saw that. Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, he didn't. He was kind of like, they're just getting started. Mm-hmm. You know, he's mm-hmm. working on his fry scream where he's like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting back to our nonlinear ADHD neurodiverse brains, mm-hmm. what do you think are some myths about ADHD and what, like the, let's do myth versus reality.
Sure, sure. Well, there are still providers who believe if you have good grades, you can't have ADHD.
Oh.
And that's not how it works. you can have gifted ADHD brain.
Ari, stop.
Everything I'm, okay?
Yeah, my child is Zoom is threatening us. It's like 9 minutes left.
Okay,
that's okay. I have the like not paid version.
But you know what? Paid version. Yeah.
Ooh, we could do a part two.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, but what I was going to say is, all right. So yes, you can. The myth is you can't get good grades, mm-hmm. and the reality is.
You can, you get with ADHD brain, there's that craving for novelty. So there are the flip side of the inattention. It's not so much inattention, it's more what you are attending to. And you can't say, I need to do this thing, I'm gonna focus on it. Your brain kind of says, these are the things that are interesting to me today. And so if you get someone who is interested in their schoolwork, they can do very well on it. The data says 1 in 4. I kind of wonder if it's higher. 1 in 4 ADHD people is also autistic. I wonder if that might be higher because we are god awful at diagnosing autism. But the autism brain, special interest. And so if the person has ADHD and is autistic and their special interest is their schoolwork, they're going to do really, really well because they're going to hyper-focus and they're going to develop strategies that work and the schoolwork itself is going to be the novelty. You also get, you know, I think giftedness itself is a type of neurodivergence. With the IQ, I mean, the testing itself is its own type of problematic. That's a whole other episode, but you know, just like IQ being low is neurodivergence. I think IQ being high is its own neurodivergence. Just it's one that we reward. So, you know, I've said that I said it was anxiety with good branding, but it's basically neurodivergence with good branding. Like, oh yeah, you're gifted. But like
anxiety with good branding. That's Wait, so what's anxiety with good branding?
Oh, giftedness.
Yes, I love it. That's fantastic.
Because of course you want to be gifted. Why wouldn't you? But it's like, you know, I mean, I was the gifted kid. And when I was in like the second grade, I keep bringing it back to Nazis. I read
it's all about them. And look, right? Yes.
But I read a bunch of World War II memoirs because yeah. I ran out of age appropriate books that were interesting to me. And I like had a complete meltdown because I was like, oh my God, like the Holocaust, like, you know, and I'm like 7, 8 years old reading all of this. And you know, my parents, I think my parents were meant very well because they were like, she likes to read. She wants to read advanced books. Isn't that wonderful? Let's let her read whatever she wants. And I was not emotionally in a state to be reading those advanced of books on an emotional level, but cognitively I understood it. So I became very anxious.
Yes, you are speaking my language.
Yeah.
I know. I was getting into that stuff too at a young age. I think I got very world weary and afraid of like having existential crises.
Yes.
When I was like 9, because I started to realize I was like, I'm me. The world is so big. How do I get in the world? And you know what I think is so funny though? In New York, they call it gifted and talented. I'm like, isn't that redundant? I'm like,
you're just well, like, and I mean, that's so like, what does that, I really don't like that they added talented because then it's like, okay, so all the kids who aren't at an IQ level to be in the gifted part, all those kids have no talent?
Yeah, like what's that about?
Those kids don't have talents.
Ridiculous. I could talk to you for hours. I think what we should do is we should have a part two.
Sure.
And I think what we should do, and what, let me know what you think about this.
Sure.
Let's have our Twitter people submit questions.
Here he comes.
Armani.
Hi.
Oh,
good morning.
He's a good man. I'm taking a picture. Look at him. Oh, and he winked at me. Oh, he winked at me.
He did. He says, why are you doing this? Okay, you came up, you get a treat. You know the rule. Yep.
I love him.
No, please don't go on the keyboard though. Okay.
He's like, so what I heard is go on the keyboard. That's what I heard.
I did say the words go on the keyboard. You're right. But you've got to be in my lap to have a treat. There you go. Okay.
So we're gonna have I'm gonna ask our Twitter friends
to
submit your questions about ADHD. Sure. Amy's gonna answer them.
Yay!
We're gonna do this again. And first of all, I wanted to ask you though, would you also be open to, in our next episode, to talking about rejection sensitivity dysphoria?
Yes. Yeah. Cause that's one thing. It's very common and we know that it's very common, but that's not a criteria.
Right. My dog is being obnoxious. Excuse me. Excuse me. Could you not? Hey! She is playing with Mr. Cat. Now, Mr. Cat, is during the day he's Mr. Cat, you know, because he's at work. But when he's off the clock, it's Kevin.
Kevin. Oh. No.
Yeah. Well, it has been truly a pleasure.
Can we
find you on the interwebs?
Yes. So I'm on Twitter at Dr. Amy PsyD, PsyD. I'm on Facebook at Dr. Amy Marshall, and Marshall has SCH. Spelling's a little bit weird. And then my blog is resiliencymentalhealth.com. I'm not on Instagram because Instagram overwhelms me. So
overwhelming. I know. I still feel like I can't really understand who it's for.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, I like looking at the pictures of cats, but that's it, you know?
I tried having an Armani Instagram a few years ago, but it stressed me out. And I just like abruptly one day stopped doing it. And I had this sense of relief that I was like, I don't have to do this.
Exactly. It's too much.
I think those pictures are still up there. I'm told someone asked me why I don't update that anymore. And I was like, oh yeah, that's still up.
Fantastic.
The answer is I don't want to.
No, the answer is no. I love Twitter because it's so simple. It reminds me of like the 90s, you know?
Well, yeah, you can do pictures if you want to, but you don't have to.
No pressure. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. It was good to talk with you.